Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. This program is devoted to those of you who are up to the challenge, who have come to realize by examining the world around you that all of the world's religious, political, military, economic, and media institutions are corrupt and counterproductive, that none of them are worth your allegiance and none of them can be fixed. Well, that is my conclusion. In examining the evidence, I am not alone. As it turns out, God had exactly the same perspective. And that is why he asks us to walk away from these things before we engage in a relationship with him. Typically, we begin this program with a one-hour review of the news and then turn to more trustworthy things in the second hour. Today, because it is Friday, and we'll be discussing the world of Islam with IQ al-Rasuli in our second hour, we begin with Kirk and with an analysis, a continued analysis of Proverbs. Proverbs in Hebrew is a marshal. It means meaningful, vivid, and easy to remember sayings. This is the sixth. How are you, Kirk?
Good morning. How are you?
You know, I've had a very good morning, and I need to apologize to you because I did not send you until just in the last matter of minutes the text of what I was working on this morning. And the reason for that is that sometimes you get engaged in something that that comes as a tremendous revelation. I was going to say surprise, and I don't like the word surprise because what we have found thus far in Proverbs 6 is a consistent affirmation of what we have always known. It's just we didn't know it was there. At least we knew that that's what God hated. We knew that's what he was trying to communicate to us. We knew why he hated these things. But we find affirmations for his instructions, his directions, his guidance in places we don't expect it. And sometimes the detail of it is almost shocking to our systems because it is so revealing, so affirming. This is one of those cases. I'd like to start a little bit kind of at the beginning and then sneak up to where I was this morning in translations because, I knew this was God's intent. But I never knew he told it to us in this blunt and bold way.
Okay.
So, what you're going to find here is that God is not fond of those who are dependent upon others. He's not fond of the apathetic individual, the lazy individual who's not willing to engage and work for themselves. For example, if we were to claim to have a relationship with God and just sit around for him to inspire us, he's not going to view that favorably. He's going to call you a lazy bones. He is going to say, what is it going to take for you to get up, stand up, open your eyes, and engage? And so all those people, for example, that don't work and who have been generational welfare recipients in entitlement programs, this is not what you're going to want to hear. Also, we have learned that God is extraordinarily adverse to governmental and religious and military institutions. All of them, all of the time, without exception. And yet, I've never seen him so much as say, you know, there's this, you could be wise and you could learn a lot if you were to recognize that there is a creature that is very industrious, very prosperous, and doesn't have any kind of a leader associated with them. And he goes on to say that their prosperity is because there are no military officials, no government officials, no judicial officials, no executives, no lords, nothing of authority over them, which is why they prosper. And so that's what we're going to consider this morning as we go through this this text. It is something that I instinctively knew, but never really had it affirmed until this morning. So it begins. This is the Proverbs 6. It begins, my son, my child. If you have given a pledge and have joined in to be acceptive toward your country, toward your fellow countrymen, toward your social, geographic, racial, or religious group, then you have bound yourself, having shaken hands with that which is illegitimate and unauthorized, foreign and estranged from my hand. Well, Kirk, isn't every person, at least born in almost any country, at some time and at some point, held out their hand, shaken a hand, or put up their hand, giving a pledge of allegiance?
Pretty hard to exist without doing that. I mean,
yeah.
Especially when you're a child, you're told to do things like that.
Right. Yeah, we put our hand over our heart and we gave the Pledge of Allegiance to the United States of America.
You gotta avoid that school when you're... Yeah.
Yeah, you'd be kicked out of school if you tried to avoid it. You know, now there's lawyers that would come to your aid if you didn't want
to be shunned
because there's a reference to there was a reference to God in it, and for that reason that they have carved out a niche where you don't have to say it. But you can't even imagine being at a sports event surrounded by people, where the flag comes out and they play the national anthem, and you choose to remain seated.
Try it.
That's what I do. I always go get a hot dog. I will, you know, do anything just to be out of that scene. But he says, if you have done that, then you have made a personal agreement and bound yourself to that which is illegitimate, and that which be illegitimate would be your fellow countrymen, your fellow citizens, your religious group, your racial group, your geographic group, your social group. You've shaken hands with that which is illegitimate and unauthorized, foreign and estranged from my open hand. Wow.
Yeah.
So it is right back to the first instruction that Abraham gave to, Yahweh gave to Abraham. Walk away from your country, which was Babylon. Walk away.
Yeah.
Until he was willing to do that, they did not talk again. There was no opportunity to engage in a relationship until he first walked away. And God is saying here, don't make a pledge to your country. You lure others into relinquishing their freedom, and you are yourself ensnared and controlled by and with the words of your mouth. You are caught by the words of your mouth. So it's interesting here that this control by, you're ensnared by, you relinquish freedoms by. It's a yakash. It was written in the Niphil stem, which reveals that individuals manipulate others and then are entrapped by their own words. So it's a stem in Hebrew where the subject both perpetrates the action of the verb and suffers the effect of the verb. Yeah.
Well,
it's the verb of quid pro quo.
Mm-hmm. Well, think about it even, this is extreme, but think about it if you're a mafia. Once you get in, you can't get out. I mean, you're there. I mean, you can't exist in some societies, so even down south without, in the old days in south, if you didn't take a point of view, then you'd either, once you agreed to it, you're pretty much in, and then you're a traitor if you don't. And we know what people think about traitors, so. Yeah,
you familiar with the slogan, live by the sword, die by the sword?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that's the Niphil stem. That if you're a liar, your lies will eventually do you in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. for most causes, there is a consequence. This is the antithesis of the Machiavellian concept of the ends justify the means. This says that the means will be your end. That's what this says. You lure others into relinquishing their freedom, and thereby you yourself are ensnared and controlled by your words, by the words of your mouth. You are caught, you are seized and held captive. You're controlled by what you say. So then, engage thusly, my son, my child. Then act upon this. Doing this now is a logical, thoughtful, and sequential response to that which has just been expressed. And choose to escape, defending yourself. This is why wa natzal. It means of your own free will, because this was written in the imperative. The imperative is the mood of volition and express choice in the second person. So the child is the second person. Yahweh here is the speaker. He's first person. If he was speaking to someone other than directly to you and me, they would be the third person. So volition in the second person means that this should be our choice. Choose to escape defending yourself of your own free will. Elect to tear yourself away from, delivering yourself from harm, saving yourself from unfortunate, unfavorable circumstances. Again, this is the Niflsim, which indicates that by separating ourselves from national pledges, we are spared their consequence.
This is why so much of what Yahweh said doesn't resonate, because I think you're pushing that corner, and you have to do this. Walk away, and that's people just won't do it.
Yep. But he's saying that you're controlled by the pledges that you make. You're bound to them. And so his solution is to do the following things. And the first thing you should do, he says, is escape. And defend yourself from them. Flee them. Choose to deliver yourself from the harm inflicted by governments, by religion, by militaries, by those claiming institutionalized authority. So God is really expressive here. Don't swear an oath to your country. You know, if you're in the military, you're swearing an oath to your military. If you're in government, you're swearing an oath to your country and to the Constitution. If most
businesses have creeds.
Yeah, businesses have creeds. Just do not swear an oath. They said it'll come back to bite you. And God's really clear here that when you do that kind of thing, that you're aligning yourself with an institution that is opposed to me, that I have nothing to do with. Do you think there's going to be lots of things in heaven that God has nothing to do with?
I think you have to do everything.
Yeah, so if you have associated yourself by pledge with an institution that is not part of Yahweh's creation, which would be all religious, political, and military institutions, if you've sworn an allegiance to any of them, you will find, A, that they are not in heaven. They're excluded. That's what he says. They're estranged from him.
Right.
But that means that you will be too. Because you will be deemed to be part of them.
I think we're back to the first statement in stone, huh?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you will not exist with other gods in my presence. I am the one who liberates you. And he calls himself Yahweh. I am Yahweh, your God. I am the one who liberates you from human oppression, from religious, political, military oppression. And you will not exist with any other gods in my presence. So then he says, you know, engage like this. So then act upon this, doing this in a logical, thoughtful, and sequential way as a response to what I have just shared with you, my son. The first thing you should do is choose to escape. Defending yourself from, freeing yourself from, tearing yourself away from, delivering yourself from harm. Again in the Niflsim. By separating ourselves from national pledges, we are spared from their consequence. Now, this is which is interesting. This is what's important to understand. I've shared this, Kirk, in the past. I'm quite confident you know the answer to this. The seven instructions that follow the three statements that are etched in stone. The three statements on the first tablet, the seven instructions on the second tablet. Those seven instructions all have something in common in terms of their conjugation. When they say, don't kill, don't commit adultery, honor your and value your mother and father, don't lie. They actually are all written in the imperfect. And what does the imperfect convey in this regard?
Well, it would mean don't make a habit of it. Don't become that person. Don't be a killer who is trained to kill. Don't be a liar. It's just everybody slips once in a while.
If you had lied but did not make a practice of lying, you would not be in conflict with the instruction.
No.
If you had committed adultery but were no longer committing adultery, you would no longer be in conflict with the instruction.
No, that's
so it is it all written in the imperfect, which means that don't do this on an ongoing basis. Well, that's what is being conveyed here. Because he says, for if, even temporarily, you have actually come to the point of bowing before the hand of the influence and control of your country, then go in an unpretentious way and press one's bone of contention with the adversarial individual or institution, boldly astonishing and overwhelming them, showing great courage against your fellow countrymen, against your societal, geographic, racial, and our religious group, even your neighbors and fellow citizens. So there's a lot of power in these words. So the second thing he wants you to do, after you've distanced yourself from these organizations and have made yourself safe from them so that you can actually engage in a relationship with God.
Right.
The next thing he wants you to do is that he says, listen, if you've done this. Now, when he says, if you've done this, he wrote it in the perfect. If he had written it in the imperfect, he would be, you know, if you've made a practice of doing this, if you're doing it on an ongoing basis, until you stop and walk away, that's why walking away was first. Until you've stopped, there's no instruction that's going to be a benefit to you. So it was written in the perfect to say that if you have done this temporarily, and by the perfect it means that you have stopped previously or stopping right now, or you have a commitment to stop in the future, but in this particular case, as we read through all of this, it's you better do this now. You really need to act now. Apathy is a serious problem. Inactivity is a serious problem. You need to act now. We'll be back. So God's saying, do the following things. If you've made a pledge, which virtually all of us have, I don't care what country you live in. You know, a lot of people who listen to this program live in New Zealand, Australia, Central America, South America, throughout Europe, Canada. And so he says,
I'd save the queen.
No,
you know, they don't get
no matter where you live, you've probably made this pledge. But so long as you're no longer making that pledge, so long as you're now doing what you and I do when we go to a sporting event, I walk away when they play, before they play the national anthem. I just don't want to be in the conflict. I don't want to make a scene. I walk away from it. And, you know, I don't vote anymore. So I'm not doing that. I most certainly don't go to a church or a synagogue or any religious institution. And so I've walked away, the first thing. But then the second thing that he asked you to do, he says, if you have been under the control, if you've bowed down to the hand, it's kind of interesting here. This is Kaf. Yeah, and that's the written as the open hand. But Kaf has two meanings. The open hand is part of it. The root of Kaf means to bend down or bow down. And so when the cough is associated with God, as it was in the Zendia, you know, they're estranged from my hand. Well, God, when they bends down, bows down, if you will, gets down on his knees to lift us up. You know, it's the antithesis of religious worship where religious buffoons get down on their knees and lift up God in praise as if you could actually do that or that that God would want that. I mean, it makes God pathetic if he created a being to worship him. I mean, it just makes him pathetic.
Yeah.
But that's the nature of the religious God. The religious God is pathetic. But the real God said right there in the creation account that he immediately got down on his knees, diminishing himself to lift up Adam, which is what we do as fathers with our children.
Right.
So if it's in God's hand, him getting down to lift us up is a good thing. But since it in this particular case, he's talking about the hand of government, the hand of religious authority, the hand of societal authority, military authority.
The oppressive ones.
You do not want to. He's saying, do not, you know, kneel before that hand.
No.
You know, as one would kneel before a king or queen, as one would kneel before the pope. So the kneeling there is really bad. So it depends on which hand you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But if you come to bow down before the hand, the influence or control of your country, then go. Walk. Halak. You know, halak was walk away from your country. It was halak. And the first condition of the covenant. Then he says, and the verb here is rafak. And it means in an unpretentious way, devoid of arrogance. You know, don't go off and lambast your government, says, I'm better than you. That's why I'm walking away from you. And he says, no, don't do that. Don't claim that you are better than they are. Don't go there with an ego. Don't go, you know, go there and overwhelm them with what you know. Be blunt and be bold, but even be courageous in doing so. But don't be arrogant in doing so.
But you know, you so still have to shamar Torah first. I mean, you can't very well engage in this argument if you don't know anything.
Yeah, that's what he's saying, is that, and he's going to say that specifically later, that the answer here is to shamar, right, to observe the Torah. And you can't overwhelm anybody. You can't astonish anybody with what you know. Until you know.
Oh, something.
As a matter of fact, I don't even think you can do it. I think knowing is inadequate. That's why teachers don't astonish or overwhelm.
Yeah.
Because you've got to transition from knowing to understanding. And that is by doing what we're doing here, where you put the things, piece things together so that you've gone from knowing stuff to understanding it. And when you understand, you're extremely powerful in your presentation. You know, I don't care how much somebody knows, they can't effectively refute somebody that understands.
This morning and last night, I read the commentary on a lot of this Proverbs.
Yes.
And my takeaway after reading commentary after commentary after commentary, these people don't get it. I mean, I went through, on all the verses we've done up to this date, I've gone through every Hebrew word. It's very plain. I don't know why you need a theologian, because it ain't that complicated. You just look up the word and it says exactly what it said. I mean, you add more depth to it than I did on my translation, but you certainly haven't missed anything. And you read the commentaries after that fact and say what is their take on it, and they're primarily Christian commentaries and Catholic commentaries and so forth, and it's just you can't, I don't know what they're missing.
Yeah, because of course,
I mean, obviously
it's walking away from those, the Christianity and Catholicism. Yeah, that God's asking you to do here. You know, it's interesting, rafak, this word that in an unpretentious way,
right,
devoid of arrogance. You know, the primary meaning of the word is actually, it speaks of treading in the mud so as to get a bit dirty.
Really?
Yeah, so what is God saying here? He says, you know, if you're going to deal with this, if you're going to speak out against, to use an intelligent, thoughtful presentation to explain why you are no longer pledging your allegiance to your country or to your religion, then you're, in the process of doing that, you're going to have to get a bit dirty. You know, when I was asked to expose and condemn Islam, that the very process of coming to know who Muhammad was and who Allah was and what the Quran represented, by taking the hadith, the statements from Muhammad and his companions, and using them to organize the Quran chronologically and to set it into the context of Muhammad's life. During that process of over 5 years, mm-hmm. I felt I was in the mud and getting dirty. It felt filthy.
I felt that way when we do Paul, questioning Paul.
Yes.
Really, it's...
Yeah. The years that I spent writing the book, and you and I spent commenting on the book, questioning Paul, you feel like you're in the mud because it's so repulsive what he is saying and what he's doing. And so he's this act of humility here is, okay, you know now that you are an heir to the covenant, that you're a kid of the creator of the universe. And yet, you owe it to not only yourself and to your fellow man to get into the mud and have the willingness to humble yourself in this regard so that you'll walk through that mud and expose them.
Mm-hmm.
And tell them the truth.
Yeah.
You've got to be willing to get a bit dirty.
Yeah.
That's what he said. So that's a really interesting verb. And then he says, and then press one's bone of contention with them. And with this adversarial individual or institution, boldly astonishing and overwhelming them, showing great courage against them. Boisterously, boldly, and bluntly make your case, demonstrating that you are in opposition against your country, your countrymen, your societal and social, geographic and racial or religious group. Wow. That's not to say we should all just get along, we should tolerate, we should not say things that are hurtful or hateful. No, it says make your case be blunt and bold. Yeah. This is a Larianism, if you know, we could, the Larianator, for those who listen to the Shabbat program, which we'll do this evening on Blog Talk Radio at 7:30 Eastern Time, under Yada Yada Radio. Larry is known as one who is just flat out blunt. And that's what this is advocating here. Give them both barrels. So he does want us to speak out.
Sure.
Against religion, against societal customs, against governments.
Wherever Yahushua went.
Yeah. Now, it says, do not give yourself over to slumber, to apathy, to being unaware. You know, in Hosea, he always says to us that a lack of knowledge is destructive. My people are destroyed because they just don't know. You know, ignorance isn't bliss, according to Yahweh. It's extraordinarily destructive. And now he's telling that just because you are unaware that you've done this, just because you're unaware that this is important for you to make this separation and for you to make this declaration, that doesn't count. Ignorance doesn't work. It's not an excuse. So he's saying, do yourself a favor. Stop being so unaware, so apathetic. Don't be so, you're sleeping through life. You're comatose.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, specifically concerning your eyes. Well, what are the eyes? I mean, what Hebrew verb did you mention earlier that is wholly and completely eye-oriented?
Ain.
Shamar Torah, right?
Oh, Shemar and Torah, of course, to observe.
Yeah, to observe. We observe with our eyes. Yahweh constantly asks us to Shemar Torah, to observe with our eyes, to closely examine with our eyes. He says, so do not give yourself over to slumber for being unaware concerning your eyes, your perspective and understanding, and the inactivity of an altered state of awareness relative to your eyelids.
How else can you explain the American population's attitude towards everything that's going on today? I mean, this is the most educated country in the world, and they act like they're the stupidest country in the world.
Correct. It's yeah, really almost stupid. Everything America is doing with its military and politically, as well as internally economically, with its entitlements programs and its deficit spending, is suicidal, counterproductive. And there's not one American in 1,000 that recognizes it. And so what that says is that the nation as a whole is apathetic and comatose. That we have a generation that's either unwilling or incapable of exercising good judgment.
Or refuses to face it. Yeah, I don't know what it is. They just...
Yeah.
I just have a hard time believing they could be that stupid.
Yeah, it's hard to believe you could. But you know... I was once one of them. I was once associated with a political party. I was once associated with a religious sect. I was a Presbyterian.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, an elder, an ordained ruling elder in the Presbyterian Church, an evangelist. You know, I was very, very active in politics, at the highest levels in politics. I was once a patriot. I was once pro-military. Thank goodness for the imperfect and the fact that I'm no longer associated with these things. Now, Kirk, we are not going to be able to get this. So this is, I guess, going to be a teaser for then tonight's program on Yada Yada Radio, where we will continue this discussion.
Great.
But God then goes and says this, "Choose to escape, defending yourself like a gazelle from the hand of power," and similar to a chirping bird from the fowler. In this case, he picked two animals. One is a gazelle, which is from SASB, means upright and righteous, honorable and sleek. It's an animal which only uses their sense of awareness, particularly their eyes, but their sense of awareness, their keen sense of awareness, and their agility to rapidly escape danger. It doesn't have a means to defend itself other than it's got to be aware of harm and escapes it quickly. Birds don't have a way of, most birds anyway, don't have a way of protecting themselves either.
No.
Particularly the sipur, which is a creature that sings like a sparrow and is quick to depart. And that's the one that is here. So he says, you know, that's an example, but wait till you see what he says next. And it's we're not going to get into much of this. We've got Glenn. I want to hear what Glenn has to say. He says, "The habitually inactive and lethargic should see, observing and examining the activities of the ant, her ways, and be wise." And what he's going to say about the ant is something we didn't learn about the ant until just recently. First, almost all ants are female. But more importantly, ants live in this colony where everyone is active all of the time, doing their job, and you get transgenerations of ants all working together to improve their conditions, and yet they don't have a ruler. The queen is not a queen in any sense of authority. The queen simply lays eggs. That's it. And he's saying, they don't have a ruler. They don't have a military officer. They don't have a government. They got none of these things. Look at them and learn something from them. Now, let's take Glenn's call, Kirk, and then we'll probably have to move on to IQ at the top of the hour.
10:54. Hope deferred maketh the heart sick. I was almost despondent. Hello. I tried to persuade Jacob that something was likely amiss. Anyway, Yahshua made the oath thing fairly simple. He said, don't swear oaths. Let your yes be yes and your no be no, and anything else comes of evil. You know?
Correct.
But about this walking away thing now.
Yeah, by the way, this, which you just said, affirms one of the things I've said 1,000 times. Yahshua didn't say anything that wasn't already presented for our consideration in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. God is saying right here, don't make an oath.
He stated it so succinctly, though, there's really no wiggle. You know, just like, yes, yes, you know, we know, anything else
yes.
comes of evil.
Yes.
You know?
So how does this Christian nation and its military and its political leaders all say that they're Christian and they swear oaths and they, I guess, they don't care about what he said?
The epitome epitome of the foolishness is a swearing on a Bible when people put their hands on the Bible.
Oh, yeah, that would be true. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like he says, the public prayer is pure hypocrisy. Don't do it. And yet they all have their public prayers, too, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Now, in terms of this coming out away from the society, you know, mm-hmm. from Babylon and stuff, there's a big distinction between an oath and a contract, you know, when mm-hmm. you're in right. business. Like, because, of course, you have a driver's license, a pilot's license, and own land. Now, sociologists, when they study this sort of stuff, you know, look at it on a continuum from actual geographic separation for groups like the Amish or, you know, cult groups or something mm-hmm. at the one extreme to, you know.
But they all have their leaders. Yeah, they all have their leaders, so they're not going to qualify.
Exactly. But, I mean, the point is that in terms of separatism, it starts with extreme separatism, including geographic separatism, all the way to relative societal, complete affirmation and participation.
He's not telling any of these people to leave Israel. He's not telling them to leave Israel. He's not telling them to go and move.
Let me just finish this, please. And then in the middle, you would have sect, which would be like your, in our society, would be like evangelicals or your Jewish groups. Groups that are somewhat affirming of the culture, but in a somewhat guarded sense, you know. So, and whether or not we agree with that sort of categorization, that's what they use for their surveillance methods, you know, when they surveil talk radio or politics or activists of any kind. You know,
everybody wants to belong to a group, and they want to advocate on behalf of their group against those groups which do not share their goals and ambitions. So that's the very mess that we have found ourselves in, and that we show affinity to leaders. And what God tells us is that is not in our interests.